Welcome to a political talk show, the likes of which you've never seen or heard. This is Strange Bedfellows, an unfiltered, unflinching conversation about the truth in politics. And now here's your host, Pat LaMarche.
Good morning once again. Strange Bedfellows Radio now on the air. And this is, in fact, not Pat LaMarche. This is Steve Kramer, her co-host, once again joining us. And we had a little bit of a tune going on there. Where something was happening over at the residence of our producer extraordinaire, Steve McManus, who...
Yes, it's been a morning, okay?
It has indeed been a morning. It's a very strange morning this morning. Something weird is going on. There's some kind of something in the air. I don't know what's going on. We had a situation last night. I mean, well, everybody was up last night, obviously. And, of course, the thing that was going on last night was our election was going on. And we had, it looks like Hillary Clinton did pretty well in most of the states that she was on with. And there was also, however, something about a gentleman by the name of Giordano Ventura. Now, that's a name you don't hear very often. Steve McManus, have you ever heard the name Giordano Ventura?
Giordano Ventura? I can't say that I have.
Giordano Ventura, he is a pitcher for the Kansas City Royals.
Okay.
Yeah. As we were, you know, as Pat is not on, and we are gentlemen here, we can talk about the sports ball, which happens every so often. And the sports ball... last night we had this gentleman, Giordano Ventura, a very talented pitcher for the Kansas City Royals, the world champion Kansas City Royals, but something of a hothead. And when things went bad for him last night against the Orioles, Giordano Ventura decided to take his best fastball and throw it directly at Manny Machado, who was one of the Orioles' best players. And Mr. Machado... took exception to this 99 mile an hour fastball that landed in his back, and decided instead to go out and introduce Mr. Ventura to, well, how shall we say, a right cross.
Wow.
And both benches cleared, so that was some excitement. The Orioles won that one. And then I understand that there was some excitement with the Red Sox, who are now no longer in first place, may I point out.
Well, yeah, but they're pretty close.
Yeah, they're close. Close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades, my friend.
And shotguns.
We are, yep. Well, that's real. But we're very much out in front right now. A single solitary game out front, but we're very much out in front. So.
Yeah, but
so
we're
that
not
was the world.
There.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. That was the world of sports, as Jim McKay might say, the wide world of sports.
Do you know Jim McKay's real name?
I do not.
That's his on-air name, Jim McKay. His real name is Jim McManus.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yes.
Wait, is he a relative of yours?
I don't believe so, but my real name is McManusaurus Rex.
As it befits, you know, the yeah. But we can too and play that game. Do you know where Jim McKay is from?
I do not.
Baltimore, Maryland. That's where he's from.
Yeah. Okay, so there you go. There's McManus is from there.
There are McManuses here in the area. So,
you know who else is from Baltimore?
Who else?
Tori Amos.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, right. Tori's a proud Marylander, and we're very proud to have her from the area as well. She loves to come back here and play. And... So some interesting things going on last night, including, like I said, the Donnybrook that I spoke about at Camden Yards. But the political Donnybrook was something interesting. It looks like Hillary Clinton did pretty well, a big win in New Jersey, which pretty much offset the idea that she needed to go ahead and do very well anywhere else. But she also collected a couple of other states, including California, I believe. And it looks like she is, in fact, the presumptive nominee in terms of pledged delegates at this point. Now, again, we don't know exactly what's going on with that because of the unpledged delegates, the so-called superdelegates that will be involved in the Democratic Party process that will be happening.
Well,
but that,
you know,
of course,
just,
was not... Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
I don't, it's pledged delegates and it's superdelegates, and I've already heard rumblings and interviews that I've seen happen with superdelegates saying that they may switch their vote.
Exactly.
So, all right, so all of this is promissory note. There's no cash in hand here. This is all promissory note. This is all like, well, I'm promising I'm going to do this. And, you know, it's like saying that you're on the Labor Day telethon and you get so much money pledged, but that doesn't mean they collect it all.
Right, exactly.
Well, it's the same with a vote. It's so many pledged, that doesn't mean you're going to collect them all. And what the press was doing, the press is dead. Okay. When I grew up, the press was, there were certain rules. And, you know, you had to be, you fought the system as the press. You got the information, even if it was, meant that it was egg on the face of government or egg on the face of whoever. Not for ratings, but for doing your job. And you got, you know, you verified. Exactly. And you verified two sources. And you, you know, there were rules that you went by. And you made sure that you did the job right. And you kind of balance that out with being first with the story. First with the story was important, but getting it right was important, and not being a lapdog for people who wanted to use you as a public relations piece. You know, like, here, run this story, and then they do. And so you're not getting. This is why we go to the alternative media, because there's no more mainstream media that we can trust because it's been bought and paid for. That's really distressing to me. You know, Bill Moyers wept at a podium where he was giving a speech about infotainment and the death of journalism. And, you know, journalism is his life. That's what it's who he is. And
yeah.
he was so distressed at there are no more journalists. They're not even training them to be journalists anymore. They're training them to be lapdogs and mouthpieces for the people in charge. And that's what I'm witnessing in the coverage of this primary season is, okay, there are so many delegates here and so many delegates there. Great, but you've called the election already, and it isn't over.
Right, absolutely. And it's interesting to realize that, you know, the Associated Press, who were the people that went on with this prediction, actually violated their own journalistic rules. It was interesting to find that out. Because somebody actually took a page out of the AP's book, literally, because they have it published, and they put it out there, and they said, here it is. This is, you know, if you have anonymous sources, which apparently this was an anonymous source or a series of anonymous sources within the group of superdelegates that polled them anonymously and said, yeah, she's got the votes, and that's all they went with.
Right.
And that was the basis for their prediction.
Translation, sure, Janie. I'll run that story for you, and you know, see you after the convention, and we'll have coffee. That's what that was.
It does seem that way, doesn't it? I mean, there's no other way of going ahead and saying this. Now,
what I'm interested in seeing what our guest has to say about all the stuff we just mentioned, because I'm sure she's right on fire about it.
Oh, absolutely. I think so as well. Now, we were talking more about Clinton's victory and such like that. And of course, Donald Trump was nominally running. However, there was another primary that was happening, and that was the Green primary. It was happening out in California and a number of other states. I believe New Mexico had theirs as well. And Jill Stein won that primary, and she's been winning these handily, which is why we haven't been hearing a lot about them. The last numbers I saw for Jill Stein in California were 80% of the vote. And she's been averaging somewhere between, for most of the states, somewhere between 70 and 80% on these. There are a number of other challengers, four to five others, as I understand. And she has debated them before. The RT Network ran a debate between her and two of those challengers. But I think we can say at this point, especially with the big win in California for Jill Stein, that Jill Stein is now the presumptive nominee of the Green Party. And fortunately, there are no superdelegates that get involved in that decision. All the delegates are pretty much the same for the Green Party throughout the entire process, and it's a what you see is what you get type of arrangement. So we can now talk about Jill Stein being the nominee for the Green Party of the United States, and she will definitely be in there. And one of the people, our guest, as you mentioned earlier, one of the people who is going to be helping her out with that and helping the Green Party out with that is a woman by the name of Julia Hammett. Julia is a college professor out in the state of Nevada. It is far too early for her to be on the phone with us, but she is. And Julia Hammett, welcome to the Strange Bedfellows Radio.
Thank you.
Now, Julia,
Can I make one clarification?
Absolutely.
I'm currently the northern co-chair of the Nevada Green Party, so I can't be endorsing Dr. Stein. Mm-hmm. Our party has not met and decided how our delegate will vote.
You haven't had a caucus or a primary yet.
Right.
I see. Okay. But this is working with the Green Party of the United States, and as we said before, there is still an active nobody actually has dropped out of that race. That is still an active race with Dr. Kent Mesplay, one of the candidates in that one. Daryl Cherney, who was an Earth First activist, he is still involved in that. Sedinam Curry, who ran for vice president at one point. Trying to think of some of the others. But Bill Kremmel, who is a college professor in Missouri. But Jill Stein, again, a big win in California last night. But more to the point, and this is something we want to go ahead and talk a little bit about with Julia Hammett, is that a lot of our listeners might not be aware of what's involved with getting the Green Party on the ballot and just being able to vote for whoever the nominee ends up being. And Julia was instrumental in getting Nevada on the ballot for the Green Party. And we wanted to talk a little bit about that process, and this is something that I'm aware of myself, having done it here in Maryland, having also gone and done it in Pennsylvania somewhat as well. Let's go ahead and talk about that. Like I said, our listeners might not be aware. How many signatures did you have to collect in Nevada?
5,431.
Wow. Okay. And could this all be like you went to, the population center would be Las Vegas there. Could you just go to Las Vegas and get them all there, or did you have to spread them out somehow?
We did get most of them in Las Vegas, it's true. But we did get them statewide. We did actually file in 8 counties on Friday. But the majority of the population of Nevada is about 2.5 million, and about 2 million live in Las Vegas. So that's where you go to get signatures.
Right.
But we did have quite a pretty busy group of people collecting signatures up here. I live in Reno in the northern part of the state, in the northwestern part of the state. And just in our area, there's within 100 miles, there's 6 counties. And we filed in all 6 of those counties, as well as Elko County, which is in the far northeastern part of the state. So we did have quite a coalition of people to help us, which is, to me, the pretty exciting story. It's about what's happening out here in Nevada. I don't know how much your viewers know about Nevada, but just in case they don't know, probably most of them don't even call it Nevada, right? But anyway.
Yeah, it would be Nevada.
Right.
I understand is wrong. I did get corrected on that a couple of times.
Right. So, but we're called, we're part of the area that's historically called part of the Sagebrush Rebellion. And that's mostly associated with conservatives, but it's really kind of a pushback on the federal government and the idea that people back east are dictating how we live in the West. And those of us who are progressives also feel that sort of independence out here in the wide open West. Mm-hmm. And also, our unofficial motto for our state is Battle Born. It's on our flag. So, and most people in Nevada who've been here for years don't historically, we haven't voted for a ticket. We're not on a party ticket, regardless of your party. So it's not unusual for us to vote for somebody in another party, or an independent for that matter, if you think it's the best candidate. So I think that was a good sort of backdrop to understand what just happened here. And so here in the Green Party, Nevada Green Party, we lost ballot access, I guess, 6 or 8 years ago, before I was a Green Party member, frankly. And I joined the Green Party right before the election in 2012 because I was sick of voting for people who didn't entirely match my values. The issue for me was the killer drones. I couldn't see America killing people overseas or anywhere with killer drones. And
were you registered as an independent?
No, I actually was a Democrat at that time. I caucused for, true confessions, 8 years ago I caucused for Hillary. Mm-hmm. I've learned so much in the last 8 years. I know, right? And I voted for Obama. So, but 4 years ago I couldn't take it anymore, and I realized I had to get out. I couldn't do that anymore, and I left. I've been an independent. I've been different things in my life. So sure. I just realized I had to leave the Democratic Party for the last time, and I moved into the Green Party because their values, the Green Party values, align so much with my values as an anthropologist, with where I want to stand. So, and a lot of us actually came out of Occupy Reno, and Occupy Las Vegas, and started up the Green Party again. And so that happened about 4 years ago. But then getting on the ballot was a huge challenge for us. And we had some help with some people who are interested in ballot access, not only the Green Party nationally, but also, I don't know if you all know who Richard Winger is, but he's been an advocate for many states trying to get ballot access.
Richard Winger, I'll just go ahead and fill in for our listeners. He is the proprietor of Ballot Access News, which is a sort of an inside baseball type of publication on ballots and elections and what it is to get on the ballot around the country. He is a member of the Libertarian Party himself, who are also going ahead and doing similar things as well. But this is somebody who, you know, if there's a matter going on about whether or not somebody can get on the ballot, Richard Winger's on top of it.
He's a tremendous cheerleader for those who are trying. He really is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So he encouraged us, and National Green Party encouraged us to sue the state of Nevada when we realized that our deadline for completing petitions was ridiculous. We had to have our for an election year. We had to have our all our signatures collected by March, or I think early April. But basically, you had to be on the ground in February and March, which is ridiculous. And
Wait a minute. So you needed to get. I mean, the election is in November, right? I mean,
right.
We're talking about, and you needed to have everything collected by March.
Right, March. Yeah, by April you have to submit, and they push back, you know, the deadlines so they can count them and everything. So we sued. So the Nevada Green Party sued the state of Nevada. So to get out of, so that was 2 years ago. So last year, the state legislature, to get rid of that lawsuit, passed the law to extend our deadline to June.
Mm-hmm.
And that gave us a shot this year. The extended deadline plus the number of votes you need is 1% of the last election. So since remember how low the vote was in the midterm, that's what reduced it down to 5-4-3-1.
I see.
So this year, if we have a huge vote, the tally 2 years from now could be maybe 10,000-11,000 or something. So it's a whole different mark. It depends on what the last election was.
And so that's just good for one election? We're not talking about any others? It's not like, oh, we're done now? Or?
Well, no. I mean, if we keep it, you know, if we run candidates and our candidates get sufficient votes, then we keep it. But if we don't run candidates and we don't get sufficient votes, then we lose ballot access again. So we've really got to be vigilant and not lose it. And I think what's happened, and Jill Stein's calling this the Nevada miracle. What's happened here in the last few weeks makes me extremely hopeful. And you know, I think you all realize that the Bernie Sanders phenomena has been it had a huge impact on America, and it's definitely, I think, an outreach of the Occupy movement. A lot of those people, you know, a lot of his phrases and his stump speeches are based on the idea of 99% people and the one versus the 1% and the corporate America and so on and so forth. So I think that was something that resonated with so many people, and Nevada was ground zero for the whole mortgage bankruptcy thing that happened in this country. You know,
absolutely.
We had more bankruptcies for mortgages than any other state in the union, and for years during the Great Recession. So, I think that was something that a lot of Nevadans left the Green Party, left the traditional Democrats. They all flocked to Bernie. So, I mean, there was a huge momentum there. But I think nationwide, a lot of Green parties lost members who said, you know what, I'm going to go vote for Bernie. If he doesn't win in the primary, I'll be back. And so we've just watched that happen, or it's happening right now. I mean,
okay,
a lot of people tell me that.
Okay, so you're noticing that people are starting to go ahead and re-register. Now, people are registered by party out there. Is that correct?
Well, and you probably know this nationally, more and more people are leaving the Democrat Party and Republican parties.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an increasing number. What is it nationally? 42% of Americans are now either third party or independent party.
Something like that, yes.
So I think a whole lot of people, I think it's kind of like a divorce. A lot of people say, you know what, I'm not going to get married again. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm not sure.
Divorce or a bad marriage.
Well, yeah. And I think a lot of people are feeling that about the Democrat and Republican parties. So we hope they land in the Green Party, that they realize that a lot of progressives, we are the party that aligns with their values.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, in our, you know, that's why I'm here. So we hope that we'll get more Green Party members in the coming months. I mean, I think we are already.
Mm-hmm.
So then, you know, fast forward to the Democratic State Convention here in Nevada, and I'm sure that was something that you all heard about. It was national.
We did
news.
A report on that, as a matter of fact. we had a couple of people call in from that area who were attending there in order to sort of fight the narrative that they developed about that, about the chair throwing and the violence and all of that
right,
kind of thing.
Right, the controversial, the big questions about what happened there and what didn't happen there. And
right.
I've heard many different stories from people about what happened there. And, clearly was establishment Democrats acting badly and non-establishment Democrats not responding well, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so,
it's – well, the funny thing about that is, of course, as journalists, we did this strange thing, which is we actually talked to the people who were there.
Yeah.
Apparently the other journalists didn't quite that far, but we actually talked to people who were there and could give us an eyewitness account of what was going on.
Right.
But let's get a little bit – and I use the phrase inside baseball because I talked about baseball and I'm a huge baseball fan. But I use the phrase inside baseball. Let's get down to a little bit of the nuts and bolts here because, I get the idea. A lot of our listeners are at home and they're in the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. And they're thinking about, you've got this sort of fringe thing that's coming up and they're trying to go ahead and get it. But I don't think a lot of people realize that this is not just a matter of we just sort of raise our hand and say we want to be on as well. If you're running as a Republican in Nevada or a Democrat in Nevada, how many signatures do you need to be on the ballot?
None.
None. That's it.
You've got it. If you get a certain percentage of the vote in the election, you keep ballot access.
Right. And that percentage is going to be set fairly artificially high to say, okay, there's only two parties that are ever going to make this percentage, and therefore we're putting them both on, and that's it. So sort of a once you're off, you have a difficulty that I'm getting back on, which is what we're dealing with right now.
Yeah, there's all kinds of cool little rules. I call them the nagging rules. They make it more difficult to get ballot access. And,
well, talk about some of those. What are the different little things that get into this? Because it's interesting. I run into them myself, like I said, and a lot of people aren't really aware of what people have to go through in order to do this. But yeah, go ahead. Let's just.
Okay. Well, one of the rules is that when you collect these petitions, these signature petitions, and of course each county has to have its own set of petitions, and you have to do it on paper. You can't do it online. And then every person who collects them has to swear before a Nevada notary, not just a notary, but a Nevada notary. They have to be licensed as a notary in the state of Nevada. And one of my favorites is they all have to be turned in on the same day statewide. And so that's, you know, that kind of made it a fun thing on Friday, us driving around. I drove 150 miles on Friday and turned in petitions in 3 counties.
Wow.
So, you know, that's a little tricky. And, you know, so there's, you know, there's various rules like that, you know, just to kind of slow us down. And every state is different. That one of the things, and I haven't talked about the Bernier Busters, which I want to talk about, but one of the things they did reach out to the Green Party and the Jill Stein campaign and said, hey, send us your petition. We'll get going in these other states. Well, there's not a petition. So I had to file a petition in March, and they put a date stamp on it with the Nevada Secretary of State, and we had to make copies of that specific image and distribute them. That's the only thing they said they would accept the signatures.
Wow.
So it's a lot of little things like that.
Yeah, that's amazing, because it's like I said, if I'm going to different counties, I mean, I'm in Maryland here, and if I'm going to different counties, 150 miles puts me in West Virginia. So, you know, it's fairly easy for me to cover 3 counties in one day. I can't imagine driving just all of that expanse out there.
Well, that's why we didn't submit in a lot of counties. We had a couple other counties which were, you know, we didn't have that many signatures in some of the very small, what we call cow counties. And there was one we thought, well, we have some signatures, but it's a 3-hour drive from either Vegas or Reno each way.
Wow.
So we kind of decided we wouldn't file, because you have to file. You know, you have to hand it to the registrar and get it, you know, so you can't do FedExing. You can't, you know, it makes it physically difficult in a state like Nevada to get it done. But, you know, we got it done, and so that's exciting. But it's all really because it's of this Bernie phenomenon and because of how the Democrats are acting in their party because of the convention. And they outraged so many Bernie supporters, and there's this whole group called Bernie or Bust.
Mm-hmm.
And you've probably heard of them. And,
certainly
and
have, yeah.
They started changing the messaging from Bernie or Bust to Bernie or Green or Bernie or Jill. And on I think it was like May, so the convention happened May 11th. By May 15th, my phone is ringing off the hook, and I'm getting we're getting all this new messaging of likes on our Facebook page, and well, what's going on here? And mm-hmm. and these and somebody called me and offered Steve Ripka, GreenDreamWeb.com. called me and said, hey, I'm going to fix your web page. We had all these people who reached out who said, we want to help get the Green Party on the ballot in Nevada. And we created a new Facebook page, and we had almost 200 people within a matter of hours who joined that Facebook page just to help get the Green Party on the ballot. And they're mostly the people that joined right away were these Bernier busters. They were Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
To me, this is the huge story, that this is maybe – the first coalition of multi-party coalition that has done something successfully in what I'm hoping will be the post-party America. I'm really hoping we move away from the two parties. People can stay in the Democrat and Republican parties if they want. Everybody in those parties recognizes that their party is in big trouble. But I want to see us reach across the aisle. I want us to build coalitions. I want us to get talking to each other. We've got to stop this craziness, this divisiveness about us versus them, this lesser evils fear-mongering. We've got to stop it. And to me, that's one of the really hopeful signs, is how these Democrats, we found common ground. I didn't argue with them about killer drones or, you know, the war strategies. I mean, if they asked me about them, I'd be very clear about them. But we found common ground. We worked on this together. And, I think that's what we're supposed to do.
That's extraordinary. And just in circulating the petitions around, we were talking a little bit about getting different parties together, particularly some of the Democrats who were for Bernie Sanders. When you were shopping the petitions around, did you get a lot of people bringing up the name Ralph Nader?
For years. In the past, this has been the thing. Right.
Well, what is your response to that? I mean, a lot of people in the Democratic Party are still of the opinion that Ralph Nader somehow sabotaged it for Al Gore, who actually, if you take a look at the numbers, won the election, and somehow turned the country over to George W. Bush. How do you get them out of that narrative?
Here's my personal response, okay?
Sure.
Because at that time, I was a Democrat. And I was actually, I became a county delegate in the Democrat Party, and I envisioned going to the state and the national convention. And then I started learning about Al Gore. And if you recall, Bill Clinton gave him a huge advantage. When he started running, his numbers were way higher. He lost that election. He lost his own state. And when I realized that if I went to the Democratic convention, and it was going to be, I forget, it was San Diego or L.A., it was in Southern California, but I didn't know if I'd be inside the convention as a delegate or outside protesting, because Al Gore's money comes from Occidental Oil. That's where his family money comes from. Mm-hmm. And that hypocrisy, you know, you don't get to tell me, look at what's happening with the world, with the climate, you know? I mean, we have a serious problem. And the oil industry is part of that problem. And is he denouncing it? Is he, had his family disenfranchised from that? Had they divested from that money? No. So, and there were things going on worldwide in Colombia. The Uwa Indians were being persecuted by Occidental Oil at the very same time he was running for president. So there were many reasons that had nothing to do with Ralph Nader. And how dare anyone tell me that I have to vote lockstep for their party or for their person. I have a right as an American to vote for the person I think is best. I don't have to vote for the person you think I should vote for. So I'm pretty indignant and I'm a proud Green now. I'm pretty indignant about the idea that anyone would roll their eyes and say we cost them the election. I'd like everyone to take responsibility for, you know, if you lose something, you know, if I lose something, I don't get to blame someone else that was over there. And you know, Nader didn't even get that much of the vote, you know. I mean, you want to blame, there's plenty of blame to go around. There's Al Gore, and there's certainly the Bush family to blame without pulling us into it just because we existed, you know.
Well, it's interesting to note that the attitude that Democratic Party activists had concerning Ralph Nader sort of transferred over to how they felt about Bernie Sanders when he started running in this particular election.
Exactly.
And it's interesting to say, okay, well, you're not supposed to be running in a different party against our nominee, and then apparently you're not supposed to be running inside the party against their nominee as well. So it kind of takes the edge off the narrative a little bit by saying, you know, at that point, what you're actually saying is that you're not supposed to oppose us. You're supposed to, you know, stay away from the electoral politics out of, you know, and let us run it because we're the adults in the room or whatever they're actually thinking.
That's right.
Did you get a lot of that as an attitude from these people when, you know, when you're out there distributing, because I can say right now that I've gotten a lot of it.
Well, I certainly have over the last 2 years, but more recently, I mean, it's It's been much easier picking since the Democratic convention here in Nevada. I mean, really, seriously, you put yourself in the right event venue, and I've had people line up waiting to sign the petition. And so, I mean, there's still a few out there that are going to be, you know, using Ralph Nader's name like it's a dirty word or something. Mm-hmm. But they, you know, when you start talking to them, I think you can make them understand that you have every bit as much of a right to vote for who you want as they do. And, you know, that's that lesser evil fear-mongering that both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party use. They both use it. You know, I think it's peculiar if you think about it that the country, until now, until we're moving away from the Republican and Democrat parties to the next thing, which I hope will be a multi-party system just like most every other country in the free world has. But, mm-hmm. you know, as I know it's painful. But I think people understand now that it is okay if you are not in one of those parties. There's a lot of people who aren't in those parties. So I think it's going to get better now. I hope it's going to get better now. And the fear mongering, that lesser evil's fear mongering that has been used, that you have, well, I just couldn't vote for Donald Trump or I couldn't vote for Hillary. I don't think it should be about these personalities anyway. Look at the issues. Who aligns best with the issues and your values, where you want to see America go, or whether you want America to be here? I mean, I'm an ecological anthropologist, and I'm scared to death for the future,
mm-hmm.
for what we've done to the climate, and there's strong correlations between the places in the world where there's severe climate crises and political unrest. It's pretty obvious, and this is going to be increasing. You know, we've got 60 million displaced people in the world right now. We haven't had this many since World War II. This isn't going to go away because the Republicans don't want to talk about it or the Democrats don't want to talk about it. We have to address these issues. So that's why I'm squarely on the ground with the Green Party. It's because they're willing to talk about it, and we have to talk about it. If we want our species to survive, really, it's that basic. So, you know, but I think people are looking for answers, and young people especially are looking for solutions. And I'm sure you've seen the recent poll last month that 91% of voters under 29 or under want a third-party presidential candidate.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That ain't hey.
Yeah, no, and it's one of these things where at that point you have to start thinking about what is it in the system that is preventing this from happening. Gather at that point, if you know what has the Nevada Green Party done as far as outreach to, let's say, lawmakers who are keeping the laws on the books that are keeping this from happening? I was going to assume that there's lawmakers out there have some rules, and we've discussed it a little bit about some of these small things. And, you know, you were mentioning about the fact that you were driving a number of miles to get to some of these places. And it should be stressed that in terms of the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, they have professional people who work for the party, do nothing but work for the party. And that's their job, is to you know, drive out and take care of petitions, signatures, whatever else, all of the house cleaning things, as I call it, keeping the lights on. That needs to be done in order to run a political party. You don't have that background because this is being run with people who are just like everybody else at home, the 99%, as you mentioned it before. So describe that as how do you tackle the fact that you're trying to hold down a job, trying to have your family, trying to keep food on the table, and you're trying to run a political party at the same time?
Well, and you know, it's obviously it's not just me, but I really do. What you just asked really resonates with me because everyone is working very hard. Everyone in America who's not, you know, the rich affluent people, everyone else is working very hard, and it's a struggle. It's really a struggle. And the Green Party doesn't take corporate contributions. So we're never going to be a party that's got oodles of money stashed somewhere that we can throw down, you know, staff like you're talking about to go out there. And you know, one of our benefits this time, of course, was that we got a bunch of Democrats to help us because the Bernie people had already had an organization on the ground, so they could help us reach out. But we've got another great advantage, which is social networking. Most of what we did in terms of communicating with each other was on Facebook. We did do some conference calls and some emails, but I would tell you 95% of how we organized was on Facebook. And sometimes it was crazy. I was in 5 or 6 personal message threads at the same time talking to different people and national people. One of our national co-chairs, Andrea Merida, was in this, you know, personal message thread, and she said, okay, XCOMs, let's start a new thread, because she just wanted to talk to the executive committee of the Nevada Green Party. So, I mean, we're learning how to do things with social networking, and that's going to help. That gives us an advantage. Let me tell you another really quick story that happened at the county conventions, the Democratic county conventions. So I've got friends all over northern Nevada, and one of my good friends happens to be Shoshone Paiute and live on a reservation way in the far northern part of the state. And so she was a delegate. She drove to Elko, Nevada to be a delegate, and she showed up, and they wouldn't seat the people from her reservation. And she's saying that on Facebook. She's going, I can't believe this. They're telling us to stand at the back of the room, and maybe we'll get to be alternates. We were elected delegates at our caucus. And so I'm on Facebook, and I'm sending messages out to Nevada leaders. So here it is, the co-chair of the Nevada Green Party. I'm sending out Facebook messages to Nevada Democratic leaders. And she got seated within 20 minutes.
Wow.
So there's a lot we can do on social networking. Maybe it's because Nevada, we like to joke, Nevada's sort of a small town. It's not that big a state. We know, you know, everybody knows everybody who's active. But I think social networking is social media is our new thing. And so many of us are basically information warriors. We're out there, and you all are mentioning how journalism is going through tough times, too, because corporations have taken over, the same banksters have taken over the major media outlets. But there's a ton of independent media outlets. And I, you know, I know a lot of young and a lot of independent journalists who are alive and well. They're just not going to work for those corporations. We have a good school of journalism, by the way, at UNR here in Reno.
Okay.
And those students, I know students, journalism students. I have journalism students in my classes. They're not planning to go work for the big corporate media. They're looking at alternatives already. So I think we'll make it. We just
my daughter. As a matter of fact, is a journalism student as well. She's out in Ohio University, which is a bit of a drive from here, but she's doing quite well, and she's. She probably is going to be working for one of the media outlets, but not in political media, possibly. So we'll see what happens with that. But
and there's, I have to tell you, I have a fairly large network of journalists and who, you know, on Facebook, who know me and through online ways here in Nevada, who I can and reach out to when I need them. When I need to share information with them and get a message out. So
that's interesting because
and they help me too find out things, you know. So we just have to redefine how we think about it, you know. It's not paper journalism, and some of them do work for the big media outlets, but they're local people or they're Nevadans and they work with us and help us to disperse information and to get information. So
well, that's interesting because in the East, at least, there's a lot more difficulty getting sort of a credulity from the media. I think that in a lot of cases when we have a media situation happening here and, you know, it's announced that, OK, it's the Green Party, it's the Green Party of the United States or Maryland Green Party, whoever. that there's a lack of credulity. People tend to tune out in the media a lot. It's sort of a okay. How did you get them to? How do you get them engaged the way that you have out there?
Well, I think one of the things is that when you see somebody's Facebook page, you get a sense of who they are. And so I think people decide who they want to ally with. But just back to the Democratic Convention here in Nevada, after that, a couple of well-known, established, well-respected journalists, and I won't name them, but they came down hard on the sort of the trying to spank the Bernie folks. They came down strongly on the Hillary side of whatever that was. And like you said, you talk to people who had actually been there and people that a variety of people there, and they maybe were a little too quick to judge what happened and put out their stories. And boy, was there a backlash. There was a huge backlash here. And those folks had to walk it back.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think there's some accountability because we know each other out here, you know, in Nevada. I mean, it's a huge state, you know, if you look at the geography, but we know each other. And so there was a walk back that was done. And, I mean, I think that, you know, we're still – the Democrats, I grieve for them, as I have actually grieved for some of my Republican friends here in Nevada who don't know what the heck just happened to their party. But I think I think it's growing pains, and I think the same thing with journalism. I think America is changing now, and we have to change, and we've got to move away from the corporate fossil fuel based bank based model, and there's going to be growing pains for these big institutions, and the people who have always sort of gone along party lines are going to feel like something is horribly wrong. They're going to feel the pain, but I'm hoping we're going to a better place, and actually I think young people are going to lead us. So, I mean, I think your daughter, I think the next generation aren't thinking about having that same type of job or role as my generation did. So
I'm
hopeful.
Yeah, that's very true, and it's interesting that you bring this stuff up because, like I said, the journalism world, in particular, Nevada was national news when it happened at the Democratic convention out there. That resonated all the way out here, and it resonated very loudly. And I think that it started something of maybe being a little bit closer. Looking a little bit closer at what was going on. Certainly we're doing it because we're independent media and this is what we do.
Right.
But I think it's now starting to go ahead and get to the national level as well, as far as journalism is concerned. And maybe we'll see a change in that as well.
I hope so. I hope soon that good professional journalists are back to where they used to be, which is looking for the unique angle. And not just trying to do what the status quo tells them to do. I mean, that's what happened when the corporations took over, right? But journalists used to be traditionally cutting edge, looking for the story others weren't telling. And I think we can get back there now.
Mm-hmm. Well, Julia Hammett, thank you very much for joining us on Strange Bedfellows Radio. Just a fascinating tale of really what grassroots democracy looks like. In the United States, just doing it right on the ground out there in Nevada, putting in the miles and getting the signatures in for the Green Party. And thanks for giving us a highlight on that and what you've gone through, and good luck in the upcoming election.
Thank you so much. And I really do want to thank the Bernie or Bust folks and the Jill Stein campaign, because we could not have done it out here without that coalition. Thank you so much.
That's fantastic. Julia Hammett joining us from Nevada. And joining us now will be San Antonio, Texas, is our news director, Don Morgan. Don, you there?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning, Don. Thankfully, we don't have to worry about what we were going to go ahead and name this segment, which was, what is floating down Don's street? lately. It sounds like the floods out there, thankfully, have all abated, thanks to your reporting from yesterday, and sounds like things are clearing up just fine, and you're back to join us.
Yeah, we are back to normal. Like we talked about yesterday, last week was interesting. Every day was a new area of town that had been flooded. Well, thankfully, that's over for now. So we'll get back to normal here pretty soon.
So you're back to your backyard.
Yes, beautiful day out here.
Excellent. So what do you have for us, Don?
Well, of course, the big story today, Hillary Clinton, the first woman to become presumptive presidential nominee of a major American political party. The Associated Press projecting her the winner in New Jersey's Democratic primary. So she gave a speech last night, saying that she was declaring victory. This is at a rally in New York City at the Brooklyn Navy Shipyard. Now, however, it doesn't mean Bernie Sanders is going away. He took the stage in an airplane hangar in California and declined to concede the fight. He told his supporters that he will continue to press on to win the final primary in Washington, D.C. next week in a build his movement through the Democratic convention in Philadelphia late next month. And then, of course, on the other side, we have Donald Trump. He kicked off the general election campaign with a pretty measured speech. He cast himself as a champion of the American people, who is better positioned than Hillary Clinton to lead the country.
It's interesting that Trump has started to use a teleprompter now. Did you see that?
Yeah, I mean, that did surprise me. I think that maybe cooler heads prevailed in that campaign.
that could be very much. Yeah,
people who can write stuff down for you, and maybe you should just stick with what they have.
Maybe you should read what they write. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
because he jumped on Hillary about that earlier. He was saying that was she didn't seem any professional or presidential. She used a teleprompter, and about 2 weeks later, sure, here he is using a teleprompter. What else is interesting? I bet you're going to tell us.
His campaign headquarters in New York were at the Briarcliff Manor, which is the same name as the place in American Horror Story.
That is what you call truth in advertising.
They call that, in the business, they call that, you can't make that shit up.
Exactly.
I wasn't even aware of that. That's perfect.
God.
I didn't put the two together at all.
That is something.
Well, the other story that's got people talking this morning is the father of an ex-Stanford University swimmer was sentenced to 6 months in jail last week for sexually assaulting an unconscious woman. He believes his son should have received probation because the 20-year-old has already suffered enough for 20 minutes of action. They've all heard about this letter that Brock Turner's dad wrote to the judge asking for some leniency, claiming his son has been through enough and that now that he's behind bars, he won't be able to eat steak. 6 months behind bars for the sexual assault of a woman back in January of 2015 outside a fraternity party on the school's Palo Alto campus.
And apparently for good behavior, it could be 3 months.
Yeah.
The interesting thing that I noticed is where's that judge from? Where did he do his alma mater?
Yeah, because the maximum was 14 years, I believe.
Yeah, and they were asking for six years. But
right.
But that judge, whose alma mater was, guess what, Stanford University.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently was an athlete at Stanford University. And this is, you hear an awful lot about this sort of thing, about it's not what you know, it's who you know. But this is just such an extreme and such a ghastly way of putting it on. Every time you see that one, I know everybody in my social circle has been posting about that one an awful lot. And it's every time they post, they're getting more and more outraged that this can happen. And it's amazing to me that this is still out there like that.
The kid's dad was saying it was a pretty steep price for his son to pay for 20 minutes of action. Are you kidding me?
Ghastly. Oh, yeah. I can't imagine even thinking something like that, but I guess, people still do.
Well, I mean, she was asleep. How bad could it be? Come on.
Goodness. And I wonder why people say that there's a rape culture out there. When feminists started talking to me about it, I was like, yeah, kind of, okay, right. But No, this illustrates it. I'm no longer, you know, this illustrates it without a doubt in my mind.
Yeah.
We opened up our phone lines to that topic yesterday during our show. And, of course, this being Texas, you know, there was, you know, well, if I were to handle it this way. It's like, well, maybe the kid's safer behind bars.
Yeah, hopefully that would be good. There's a number of people out in Texas who have their own weapons and might want to do something about that, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And then another zoo in the news today, this one in Salt Lake City, where staff was walking through the ground yesterday and realized that a leopard was missing from behind its cage.
Oh, that's not something you want to have missing.
Yeah. No, 4-year-old female leopard. About an hour later, some zoo visitors found it sleeping on a high outdoor ledge out in the public area, about a couple of feet from its exhibit. They managed to tranquilize it and put it back into its safe area.
Can you imagine that phone call? Hello, lost and found. We have something out here for you. I think you might want to come and get it. We're not Texans here, and we don't carry our own weapons. We are need something to do this well. Jeez.
Yeah, I mean, how do you misplace a leopard? I don't get that.
I don't know. It's maybe that's the other part of the American Horror Story thing that leopards are getting out. Maybe he read the instructions off the teleprompter and got out that way. Well,
unless you're Siegfried or Roy, you probably don't have a leopard lying around that's just going to get out of its cage.
Yeah, one would think. I mean, I gather that maybe the news reports got over to Salt Lake City and the leopards watched it and said, well, look, if a kid can get in, I can get out. So here I'm going for it. You know,
yeah,
cover
absolutely.
Me, Roy. I'm going to go ahead and, you know.
Why are the rebels getting all the attention? What about us leopards? Come
exactly,
on.
A leopard. You know, come on.
Yeah. Well, that is it, gentlemen. Thank you so much for taking some time to share with me this morning. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Don. You didn't see the Donnybrook that happened at Camden Yards last night, did you?
No, I didn't see that.
I was bringing that up a little bit. There's a pitcher for the Royals who decided to take his best 99-mile-an-hour fastball and throw it right at Manny Machado.
Oh.
And Mr. Machado went out to the mound and decided that perhaps that he needed a couple of knuckle sandwiches in order to wash down with that humility. And things escalated quickly, as they say.
That seems to be a trend the last few weeks in baseball where fisticuffs is coming up pretty quick. I guess they figure it works for hockey, so why not?
Yeah.
Well
at
no one
least
else,
in hockey.
Other than the fights, no one's talking about the games.
Right. Well, at least in hockey, you're not generally taking a slap shot and aiming it at somebody's head, except for
That's
maybe the goalie who has a nice, you know, helmet on. This was something where, you know, this guy started, and it was literally, they clocked it. It was his best fastball of the day.
Oh, man.
His fastest fastball of the day wound up and threw it right at Manny Machado. So Mr. Machado decided that an attitude adjustment was in order. Adam Jones had a great quote afterwards is saying that this guy has electric stuff and it's great, but he's got a circuit board that's a little bit loose between his ears, was the way he put it.
Oh,
so,
man.
So we had a little bit of... Sorry, go ahead.
He hurt that bad, though.
He sort of hobbled out, but by the time he made it to the mound, he discovered a little bit of extra wind in order to move that right cross right through his face. So, yeah.
He found some in the reserve tank.
He managed to find it that way. So,
wow.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Don Morgan.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yep. And just as a programming note, as we're about to go ahead and head off the air right now, we're going to be on a hiatus for a little while as Pat LaMarche is still recovering from her sickness. I think she has some kind of a stomach flu is what's going on. I don't even know, to be honest with you. But
if we go by the HIPAA rules, we're not allowed to say anyway.
Exactly,
yeah, I think
right.
I think she's
something
got
along those lines.
something that, yeah, it's just debilitating her to the point where carrying on a conversation is really not going to happen. So
yeah, so we're going to take a little bit of a hiatus, and we're going to be played out by our pianist, and hopefully sometime soon we'll be back. We'll announce it to everyone when the show's coming back. But for right now, for the illustrious Steve McManus, my name's Steve Kramer, and this is Strange Bedfellows Radio. We will talk to you soon, hopefully.